Here's your longevity finding for today, and it is going to reframe how you think about everything you put in your body and your mouth before a meal. Published research cited by neuroscientist Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett shows that experiencing social stress within 2 hours of eating causes your body to metabolize that meal as if you had consumed 104 additional calories. Not perceived, measured. Metabolic efficiency drops, quality fats get stored instead of burned. Extrapolated across a full year of chronic stress, that mechanism alone could account for approximately 11 pounds of additional weight gain from identical food intake. Welcome to the Core Daily Optimizer. I'm your host, and today we are going deep on what I call mechanism-matched intervention, the idea that your biology does not respond to generic protocols. It responds to the specific, precise input that matches the pathway you are actually trying to fix. We are covering B vitamin form selection for peripheral nerve repair, the attentional spotlight protocol that produced a 27% performance improvement in a single session, and the predictive brain's relationship with food and stress. Every section has a protocol you can start today. Let's start with something that trips up even experienced biohackers. If you are supplementing B vitamins for neuropathy, fatigue, or nerve function and you are not getting results, or worse, you are getting more tingling, more numbness, more burning, there is a high probability you are taking the wrong molecular form. The dominant failure mode here is not deficiency, it is conversion dysfunction. Your serum labs can look perfectly normal, even elevated, while you are functionally deficient at the cellular level. That distinction is everything. Let's walk through each form specifically. Starting with B6, the version in most grocery store supplements is pyridoxine hydrochloride. Standard, cheap, widely available, and potentially harmful if your liver is sluggish. Here's why. Pyridoxine HCl must be converted by the liver into its active form, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, or P5P. The protocol here is to use P5P exclusively. That conversion step is blocked by low magnesium, systemic inflammation, insulin resistance, and compromised liver function, all conditions that are common in the people most likely to be supplementing for neuropathy in the first place. When that conversion fails, unmetabolized pyridoxine accumulates in the bloodstream and becomes dose-dependently neurotoxic. It produces the exact symptoms, numbness, burning, tingling, that it was supposed to resolve. If you have ever had a high serum B6 reading alongside active neuropathy symptoms, that is not reassurance. That is the conversion failure signal. The protocol here is P5P only, capped at 50 milligrams per day without clinical supervision. Building on that, let's talk B12. Cyanocobalamin is the dominant synthetic B12 form in mass-market products. It requires a methylation step to convert into methylcobalamin, the active form your nervous system actually uses for myelin sheath synthesis and DNA replication. Here's the challenge. MTHFR polymorphisms, which affect an estimated 40 to 60% of the population to varying degrees, impair that exact conversion pathway. Add gut dysbiosis or low stomach acid and you have compounded the bottleneck. The protocol here is methylcobalamin exclusively for neuropathy applications. If MTHFR status is a factor for you, co-supplement with methylfolate, specifically 5-MTHF, because B12 and folate share the methylation cycle. For individuals with impaired intrinsic factor, the research supports 1,000 to 2,000 micrograms of oral methylcobalamin daily to exploit the passive diffusion pathway. Now the one that most people miss entirely, B1, thiamine. Standard thiamine is water-soluble. The myelin sheath is a fat-based structure. Water-soluble B1 cannot penetrate lipid membranes at therapeutic concentrations, which means it never reaches the actual site of nerve damage. The delta here matters enormously. Think about a graph where standard thiamine supplementation produces virtually no measurable change in neural tissue B1 concentrations, while the fat-soluble derivative, benfotiamine, shows substantial penetration into nerve tissue. That gap in the curve is where the therapeutic effect lives. The protocol here is benfotiamine exclusively for neuropathy applications. One critical prerequisite, because benfotiamine is fat-soluble, it requires adequate bile flow for absorption. If you have had your gallbladder removed, or if you have known liver or biliary dysfunction, you need to address that upstream before expecting this to work. And rounding out the stack, alpha-lipoic acid. It reduces oxidative stress in neural tissue, regenerates glutathione, and improves insulin sensitivity, which directly addresses the upstream metabolic driver of neuropathy. It provides meaningful adjunct support, but the data is clear. Alpha-lipoic acid in isolation gives you partial relief at best. It needs to be stacked with the full B vitamin protocol. One safety note for anyone on hypoglycemic agents, ALK-S insulin sensitizing effect can potentiate hypoglycemia, so monitor your blood glucose closely. The upstream non-negotiable across all of this, magnesium, glycinate, or malate form, is a cofactor for the B6 to P5P conversion, and high circulating insulin blocks magnesium absorption while simultaneously depleting B1 and impairing methylation, which means a low-carbohydrate dietary approach is not optional for refractory neuropathy. It is the root-level intervention that makes every downstream conversion step possible. For measurement, the protocol here is baseline blood work retested every 90 days. Track serum B6, HbA1c with a functional target below 5.5%, tighter than the conventional pre-diabetic cutoff, fasting glucose below 90 mg per deciliter, serum magnesium, HOMIR, and HSCRP targeting below 1 mg per liter.
For higher signal functional data, an organic acids test reveals cellular B vitamin status that serum panels routinely miss. And on a weekly basis, log your neuropathy symptoms, numbness, tingling, burning on a simple 0 to 10 scale, noting time of day and dietary carbohydrate intake. That's your primary N-of-1 feedback loop. Now let's move from molecular optimization to something you can deploy in your next workout with zero equipment and zero supplementation. Dr. Emily Balsettis at NYU's Department of Psychology identified an attentional technique that produced a 27% improvement in task completion speed and a 17% reduction in perceived exertion in a single session after one brief instruction block. The delta on that perceived exertion graph is significant. Think of it as a vertical drop in the RPE curve without any change in actual workload. The tool is called narrowed spotlight focus. Instead of allowing your gaze to scan broadly during physical effort, you deliberately constrain your attentional field to a single, discrete, circular target ahead of you. Pick a concrete landmark, a stop sign, a lane marker, a mark on the gym floor. Visualize a tight circle of light illuminating only that point. Suppress peripheral stimuli. When you reach or pass that target, immediately reset to the next subgoal. Here is the mechanism that makes this work. The visual system does not report objective distances. It reports anticipated costs. In a placebo-controlled study from Balsettis' lab, participants who consumed a sugar-sweetened drink with elevated circulating glucose confirmed by blood measurement 10 to 15 minutes post-consumption perceived an exercise finish line as significantly closer than those receiving a non-caloric placebo. Narrowed attentional focus exploits the same proximity illusion. The brain suppresses processing of intervening space. The target registers as subjectively nearer. Anticipatory cost appraisal drops, and actual output velocity increases.
The protocol here is straightforward. Works for running, walking, gym floor movement, any linear trajectory effort. For CGM users, Balsettis' glucose data supports timing fast-acting carbohydrate intake 10 to 15 minutes pre-effort to further enhance the proximity effect independently of the attentional technique. Track your RPE on the Borg 6 to 20 scale immediately post-session alongside pace data, and you can quantify that 17% reduction in your own longitudinal record. Stress during a meal, published in JAMA, reduces the participants' postprandial glucose response by 10%. That's the mechanism showing up in your data. And pair that practice with what the MetThrive case studies reinforce, a protein-forward meal structure, half-plate protein, half-plate vegetables, minimum two vegetable sources. That food architecture, combined with pre-meal stress regulation, creates compounded metabolic benefit that neither approach achieves alone. Your N-of-1 experiment for this week. Pick one meal per day, your largest meal, and implement a 5-minute extended exhale breathing practice immediately before eating. Log your perceived stress level on a simple 1 to 10 scale before you start. Note whether you practiced or skipped, and if you have a CGM, capture your post-meal glucose peak. Run that for 7 days. By day 7, you will have enough personal data to see whether Barrett's 104-calorie stress tax is showing up in their own physiology. That is mechanism-matched intervention in practice, not a generic wellness tip. A targeted input, a measurable output, and a feedback loop you own. Optimize your day. Talk tomorrow.